Backseat Producers, episode number 239, Stand By Me.
Daryl.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
It's
back down to the two of us again.
I know. I mean, what is it with this? We just like, does nobody love us anymore?
Well, Adam was supposed to be back, but apparently one of their cats took ill a little while ago and had to go in surgery today. And all reports are that the cat is doing well and is doped up on morphine, so the cat is living the high life right now.
He's got a high pussy, huh?
But yeah, the point here is that Adam's not here because his pussy's sore.
Yes.
So,
and high too.
Yeah.
On drugs.
Yeah. So Anthony's not here. Deuce is not here. He had a work project come up, so
it's very suddenly.
Yeah, very suddenly came up on him, and he thought he was going to be done with it for recording tonight, but he was unable to. So it happens.
Yep. Sometimes that paycheck becomes way more important than the podcast.
Yeah, because we don't get paid.
Yes. This is a not for profit operation with the very emphasis on no profits.
No, this is a cash negative business.
Yes, very cash negative. The labor of love, though.
We drink well, so that's, or we drink fairly well sometimes.
Yep. I'll drink to that.
So a couple of pieces of business. First off, next week we are going to be doing Bad News Bears, and I believe that pretty much
that is the end of our summer theme.
Our summer theme,
which is nice because it's going to be next week is Labor Day weekend, upcoming Labor Day weekend,
and yep,
all sorts of festivities.
Yeah, actually, the episode will release on Labor Day, which is traditionally the end of summer.
Yep, so it's around in the Midwest here.
It actually is working out kind of well. The week after that, we were kind of looking at things, and we thought it would be nice to do since we are kind of known as the Recently Dead Guy podcast, we are going to do an episode for Tony Scott, and we have chosen True Romance for that episode.
Yes, due to Mr. Scott's rather tragic demise.
Yeah, that was, it's sad. It is sad. I mean, it always disturbs me when someone takes their own life, but there were greatly extenuating circumstances in his case. So you almost wonder, was it something he would have done if it was terminal cancer anywhere other than the brain? If the actual, you know, because it was brain cancer. So would that tumor, is that tumor affecting his cognitive thought? Something like that. So,
or he just didn't want to face the long treatments.
Right.
Felt that he had achieved everything he wanted to achieve.
Well could have been it.
Yeah. Just to give a side note, though, author Jerry Purnell had brain cancer, a brain tumor, several years ago, but he underwent severe radiation treatment and blogged about it in his column, Chaos Manor. And he was pretty much out of action creatively for about a year. He refers to it, he had to get a sunburn to his brain.
Yeah.
But he has since recovered fairly well.
That's good.
Like I say, not all cancers like that are as treatable as his.
No. No, and the reports that I saw said that it was inoperable, so.
Well, anything might be not operable, but it still means it could have been treatable due to radiation.
Sure. Sure.
Of course, the funny thing is your brain is the most least radio sensitive organ in your body. It can absorb huge, huge amounts. that would kill any other organ in the body, but brain cells are relatively unaffected. But then again, we do not know the entire circumstances of his illness, so we can only surmise that it must have been very, very serious for him to consider such a drastic end.
Yep. So 2 weeks we are gonna celebrate his creativity, a movie that he directed.
And boy, was he terribly creative.
Yeah, I mean, most of his obituaries threw up Top Gun as, you know,
his the best
director
known, yeah.
director of Top Gun, which that's fair. I mean, that's probably
the most quintessential 90s movie.
Well, it's the movie that he's most known
noted for.
That was 80s.
80s, excuse me.
That was 80s.
And just about everybody who grew up in the 80s saw that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And how many of us, when we saw it, we all wanted to be fighter pilots.
Right.
We wanted to be Navy fighter pilots.
That's right. A couple of years ago, my brother and sister-in-law, they built this new house. They finally got around to finishing their basement. Got this nice, big, huge TV. Finally got a Blu-ray player. So for the next birthday, normally my brother and sister-in-law and Julie and I, we don't give gifts to the adults. We normally just focus on kid birthdays. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just we would rather treat the kids a little extra special than the adults. But for this birthday, and I'm pretty sure, if memory serves, it was her 40th birthday, I got her Top Gun on Blu-ray because she just loves that movie. I'm sure it couldn't have anything to do with, you know, Tom Cruise shirtless and all that. But yeah, she loved that movie and got to the point where I guess at one point they actually did a screening, like they had a party at their house so that they could screen for all of her friends Top Gun on the big Blu-ray.
Couldn't think of a better way to spend a birthday.
No, really. She had a great time with it. So that's what we're going to be doing in 2 weeks. The other piece of business I have is recently there have been some changes going on elsewhere in the internet. And due to that, we've taken an astray.
Yes.
Here at Backseat Productions. Jack yes. Mangan's Deadpan Podcast is now kind of housed under the roof of Backseat Productions.
It's taken shelter under the banner of Tony Mass Backseat Productions.
That's right. It's
Tony,
not
congratulations
be...
on your growing media empire.
Yeah, it's getting bigger. There are actually probably going to be a couple of other announcements like this. Maybe not for podcasts, but a couple of blogs that might be being hosted with us too. But Jack is a great guy. I interviewed with him a couple months back, and he's been slowly playing the interview. The third and final part of which, I believe, gets released this coming Tuesday. And you know, we worked together. We figured out some stuff. I knew his hosting was going away, and I offered him a spot. We've got room, so not much is going to change for us, not much is going to change for him. It's just going to be that he now has a place to host his stuff until...
he has his little home on our server.
That's right. And we welcome him. And if you're a listener of our show, I would highly recommend listening to Jack's show.
You will not be disappointed. It's unique.
It is unique. It's a lot of fun. It's in some ways you try to describe it and... It doesn't
sound like...
Well, let's
put it this way. It's not called Deadpan for nothing.
No, it's not. And if I told you about it, I would probably tell it terribly. And you wouldn't...
Yeah, let Jack speak for himself. Yeah, he does a better job.
The jokes speak for themselves listening to the show. I've recorded a couple of bits for Jack over the years. It's a great show. I have a lot of fun listening. It's one of the podcasts that I do still listen to every week. So, and that's... I mean, I've... pared my podcast listening down considerably, but I still am a listener to the Deadpan.
Yes, it's not because that we don't have we don't like dislike podcasts until we do one. It's just there's so many hours in the day and only so many great shows you can listen to.
That's right.
In an hour in a day.
That's right. Well, and I you know when I first started listening to podcasts, I had a job where I literally just sat there and almost basically did data entry. So it was 8 hours of just mindless work. I listened to probably 35-ish hours of podcasts a week. And it was mostly just sitting at my desk at work.
Just, yeah, just key, eye key coordination there. Just, like you say, mindlessly keep punching
right
in.
Right. I'm to the point now where I'm probably listening to about maybe an average of about 6 to 8 hours a week. I mean, it's fallen that considerably, mostly because I just don't have the time anymore.
Well, yeah, but you mostly listen to them during, say, lunchtime or during the commute? Or
the commute.
Yeah,
it's mostly.
You got a little bit like about 30, 40-minute commute.
Yeah, depending on the traffic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and if I go out for lunch, it, you know, from where I'm at, it can take 5-10 minutes to get to a place to grab lunch. So, you know, I can listen to upwards of an hour and a half a day. You know, just in driving and around time.
Right. And just like other dead times, lunch, breaks, whatever. Yeah. Just catch them here and there.
Yep. Yep. And yeah, that's all the news. So let's go ahead and talk about
let's
this
launch
movie.
Into our story. Yeah. Stand By Me.
This was a Stephen King novella.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, yeah, it was a part of a collection of short stories, in fact.
It was. In the credits, they represent it as being a novella. Mm-hmm. The story was a novella, mm-hmm. But just based on the line.
And it was also paired with several other notable Stephen King stories that became extremely successful, which is kind of interesting because the best Stephen King adaptations are the ones that aren't done by Stephen King.
Right.
And his short stories apparently have had better success than some of his novels.
That's true. That's true, and
at least to a wider audience.
And they, you know what? It seems to be his earlier movies. Mm-hmm. I enjoy his earlier movies better than his later movies, with the exception of the non-horror novella kind of mm-hmm. stuff. This and Shawshank,
Running Man, Shawshank Redemption, Stand By Me. Throw me out some bones here.
Going into some of the horror stuff that I really mm-hmm. enjoy, Firestarter, Dead Zone, Christine, mm-hmm. Pet Sematary. Mm-hmm. Those movies are good.
Well, yeah,
I
Christine and
them.
Pet Sematary were very good, but some of them, I could kind of take them or leave them.
Yeah.
The worst ones, of course, are the ones he tried to direct himself.
Yeah.
We can safely scratch off Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive was rough.
Rough is not the word.
That was
hideous. It was a horror show in itself.
Yeah, yeah. Carrie.
Carrie could be kind of good. I mean,
it doesn't stand up.
No, it doesn't hold up.
No, it doesn't hold up. It's
first time it was shocking.
It was solid. But yeah, I can't. There are parts that are repeated today, like quotes and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but it's almost more out of parody.
Mm-hmm. It has become a cliche in itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which can either be a tremendous honor or a tremendous aggravation.
Right. Now, I understand that they're remaking Carrie.
Yes, there is one in the Carrie redo in the works. For God's sakes, I think this is one remake that could be avoided, but
it depends on how they do it. Yeah. I mean, there's parts of it that are just.
I know they're going to have
the original movie. The original movie was slow. I mean,
it just picks the pacing of that time for her.
Yeah, that pacing is tough to watch now. It really is. But Stand By Me is not a horror movie.
Nope.
Even though the novella it's based on is called The Body,
mm-hmm.
which you'd think
would be
being a Stephen King story would be a horror story, but it's not. What'd you think?
I enjoy this movie. I mean, I saw it when it first came out, and I thought it was really, really sweet little movie.
Mm-hmm.
I went into it. I was trying to remember just my attitude at the time I was watching it when it came out in the 80s was I had heard that this was a Stephen King based on a Stephen King short story. I said, okay, it's like Stephen King horror. But then some of the other reviews came in and says, no, it's not completely like that at all. So I had to go to see it. It's a very sweet story.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it a second time, yeah, I start seeing, came back to that same feeling. I had some trepidations about watching it again. And I still enjoy it. I mean, when you sit back and just let the story happen, there's nothing really slam bang about it. It's basically a story of four guys who are friends,
mm-hmm.
who are trying to have an adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. The I like this movie. I liked it more the first time I saw it. Watching it now, I saw what were either flaws in the story or tips at a point of view that could have been made just a little more overt. And I'll get into that in a minute. But the one thing, I mean, what this movie's about comes from, there's one line in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you'll never have friends like you had when you were 12
years old.
And that is the point of the movie,
mm-hmm.
period.
Right.
I mean that's it.
It started, well, they telegraphed that somewhat in the opening scene.
Yes, when
you hear later the narrator of the film, Richard Dreyfuss, who does a cameo,
mm-hmm.
Sits there and he's looking at the paper about the name that we see there, Chambers, an attorney.
Chris Chambers.
Who died in a stabbing in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns around and he sees two kids on a bicycle ride by. And that's where it kind of launches into the nostalgia flashback that we suddenly figure out, okay, that's what he was thinking about those two boys. You know, that was me, is, you know, many years, I mean, 30 years back.
Yeah. Yeah. Richard Dreyfuss does a bookend,
mm-hmm.
Scenes in this movie, the beginning and the end, encapsulating that really we're led to believe that this story is a flashback that for Dreyfuss's character takes place within just a few minutes of mm-hmm. him watching these boys bicycle down the
right.
street. And that makes sense. I have a problem with it in that there are scenes that take place in this movie that his character could not have known about. Was not there. Could not have known what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly the scene, it was all the scenes with the older boys.
Right, but I'm taking this that he was getting this later on secondhand. He's putting this into a book at the end of the movie.
Right,
we see that he's typing away on his Wang word processor. Boy, talking about flashback back from the past there. I estimate that he was, again, had interviewed these guys later on to find out the backstory.
I think that's
or at least find their point of view.
I think that's what it meant to be. And one of the things I thought was clever about that, if that's the case, is what they were doing, what those boys were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was stuff that either he interviewed them and it was their stories, their mm-hmm. boisterous stories of what the bold things they did, or it was what he imagined.
Well, being that he is an author, we can allow him that license because he has an active imagination. I mean, when they're sitting around the campfire telling quote unquote ghost stories,
right?
Of course, his is the one about the guy who eats the pies.
That is a great story, by the way. That is a fantastic
story. And I like the line at the end where he says, well, what happened next? Well, no, that's the end.
Yeah.
that was the end. I imagine he went back and ordered himself a cheeseburger for his victory dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. And when I started watching the movie, I actually forgot big parts of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I remember certain scenes. I remembered the scene on the bridge.
Right.
I remembered,
because that's the one that's often shown many, many times as an example.
Right. I remembered Jerry O'Connell's character and Corey Feldman's character singing and dancing down the lane as the the boys were hiking.
Yes, they like to sing the theme song to Have Gun, Will Travel.
Yeah. As soon as he started telling the story, mm-hmm. and it went to it kind of flashed over to showing the story that he was telling, mm-hmm. I remembered that whole story vividly. Like, oh,
it sort of sticks in the mind.
I remember what's coming, and this is going to be awesome and nasty. the blueberry pie just go everywhere.
Like a fire hose, yes.
The movie's fun. I think there's some interesting things we can talk about here. First, I do want to talk about the acting.
Mm-hmm.
The actors that came out of this are
phenomenal.
A lot. Phenomenal, and a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
We had River Phoenix.
Right. Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton. Jerry O'Connell. Mm-hmm. Corey Feldman. Mm-hmm. Kiefer Sutherland. John Cusack.
Oh, yeah. Came with John Cusack.
I think that's
the major ones.
Those
right
are the
there.
Major. Those are the major actors. Or not even.
Well,
actors,
this was a.
Those
are the ones.
Those are the major characters. Yeah, yeah, characters.
And it's interesting that all these guys, these are at the very beginnings, literally at the very beginnings of their careers.
Yes, yeah. Some of them had been around a little while,
right?
But mostly that was Kiefer Sutherland.
And Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah.
Well, Richard Dreyfuss and John Cusack.
Mm-hmm.
He had been in a couple things at this point too. But I had forgot that Cusack was in this movie,
mm-hmm.
and it was like I saw him in the listing,
the credits,
the credits, and it was like, wow, I don't remember him being in this movie.
Oh,
At first, I thought he was one of Kiefer Sutherland's, you know, cronies, and then when they started mentioning, I had forgotten about the older brother who died when I'd seen this. And as soon as they mentioned him, it was like, oh, yeah, I think that's where he is. And sure enough, that's the character he was. And they had a couple of nice flashbacks with his older brother's character. I think of the four boys, the four primaries,
mm-hmm.
River Phoenix was fully, you know, a head above the other three in terms of acting talent.
Well,
I mean, he was just so much more sincere, and it's just such a strong performance. It's really, really solid.
Well, I think they all did fairly, very well.
They for, all,
considering these actors are in their early tweens.
Yeah,
they come off very natural as for kids at that time.
They do,
and it's remember this whole thing is set in 1959 in a small town in Oregon, mm-hmm. of all places. And it's an interesting to see that, you know, we look back and like, man, were we really that wild? Well, yeah, we're. I mean, 12-year-old kids, you know, they go off on 2-day hikes across the train tracks in the wilderness, saying, "Hey, mom, I'm going off on a, I'm going over and I'm gonna camp out at my friend's house. We're going to drag races tomorrow. Eh, bye, see you when you get back."
Yeah, I think it really comes to for me the scene where he kind of gives that big monologue,
mm-hmm.
where. He says, look, nobody expects much out of me. What's funny is we know he's the kid who's kind of wild. Everybody kind of looks up to because he's the one who's kind of shady. You know,
thinks he is.
Well, yeah, everybody thinks he is. But we know if we were paying attention at the beginning of the movie, he's dead in the future, but he's an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's clearly established, but before we go, we do a flashback, mm-hmm. to see him as a boy.
Yeah, we find everybody.
So we know he ends up okay at this point, which I think is kind of cool because it's you don't expect him to be the one to be the attorney.
Well,
just based on what you know, at least in the first 20 or 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, later on we get into the movie when he really opens up to his friend. You know, he trying to reject the role that society's trying to place on him that, oh, well, he's just a crummy kid from a crummy family.
Right.
We don't even bother to even have anything to do with him because we know he's going to be a failure. And he's trying to he's talking to his friend about, you know, everybody thinks I'm just a criminal in training.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I know I'm better than that. Mm-hmm. I'm not the monster they think I am. But his friend there, he sort of talks and says, well, why don't you take the advanced courses with me? Mm-hmm. And he keeps trying to say, no, I'm going to hold you back. Don't be associated with me. We're going to just drift apart.
Right.
And then he grabs that, reaches out and says, no, stay with me. Let's grow together.
That, and I liked when Will Wheaton's character was kind of talking bad about himself. He was being really self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris, River Phoenix, turns around and says, that's bullshit. That's not you. That's your dad
talking.
And I mean, he just dressed him down. Like, the only way, the only person who can do that to you is your best buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, no, you need to stop this. You're being dumb.
Yeah, you're just killing yourself.
And they're at an age where that discussion happens. You talk to your friends that honestly at that age. You hurt their feelings. But it happens.
Yes,
because the thing is, because you haven't learned to restrain yourself. You haven't learned.
It's honesty, the pure honesty just flowing out of you.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. I mean, it's brilliant writing. The acting is incredible through that scene. The hurt look Will Wheaton has on his face is great. That scene sells this movie perfectly.
Mm-hmm. But he knows deep in his heart, it's true. He's just...
Yeah.
It is not him talking. It's just someone else. It's the same thing.
Nobody validates him for who he is, except for Chris, and
who sees his true self.
Yep.
Just as Gordy sees the true self of Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad they changed the title of this. The body is fine. I mean, it is what the MacGuffin of the story is.
Yeah.
It's the point, the reason that they're going on this trip. But the point of the story is, it is truly a coming of age story. And it's also a story about
right. They all change,
being
right.
being buddies.
Right. They all kind of change somewhat, or at least Gordy and Chris change.
Yep.
The other two don't do much too much, but...
They don't do much, but they are who they are. The one is the chubby kid, the kid
Vince.
Vince, he gets picked on. But he's also the kid that kind of prepared for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came a little bit prepared. He didn't bring food, but he kind of came prepared. And Corey Feldman's character is...
Teddy Juchon.
Teddy, yeah. Teddy's crazy. Teddy's just... freaking psycho.
Well, let's say psycho. Let's just say he's very unrestrained.
Yes.
But then again, given what he's gone through, not surprising.
No. It's really not.
In fact, it's kind of amazing that he holds it together as well as he does.
And when I was growing up, we always knew there's a couple of kids who, yeah, you don't ever go to that kid's house. He will come out and play with you, and he can come to your house, and he can spend the night, and he can have dinner at your house. And he's a little bit off, but you never go in his house because his dad is...
His parents are not all quite there.
Yeah, there's something off about the parents there, and you just don't go in. And that's the sense I get out of Teddy, that he is that kid. That maybe his dad, you know, he's the one that you look in the window or when you knock on the door, Teddy opens up the door and you can see dad... sitting there in his t-shirt with a beer in his hand at, you know,
4 o'clock. 10,000-yard stare right through your eyeball.
Yeah, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, like, get out of here. You know, you're interrupting my whatever, my drink. Yeah, you just get that sense that he's that kid.
Yeah, he's, you know, not exactly very sociable.
Right. And Vince is the kid who really just wants to fit in. He wants to get along with the guys. He takes all of their their insults and abuse. And,
he says, yeah, like, so yeah, go ahead, tease the fat guy. I'm there.
Yeah, and what's hilarious is that Chris O'Donnell is anything but the fat guy anymore.
No.
Jesus Christ. I am a straight male, and that dude grew up well.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. He is a good looking guy. And yeah. he grew out of that.
Yes, it's one of the things mentioned in the trivia portion of the show notes is that Jerry O'Connell does not like to talk about Stand By Me at all.
Really?
Because he's very sensitive to that, the fact that he was overweight during that time of his life. He doesn't like to be reminded of it.
I can see that.
One of his greatest roles he ever did. He doesn't like himself in this movie.
Yeah, he had to take a lot of abuse through the course of the movie, too.
Well, as an actor, you can't expect that. He just doesn't like the way he looked.
I understand that.
Yeah, he doesn't like to be reminded of himself as he was then. Because if you look at his current photo, okay, yeah, he hit the gym quite well.
Yeah.
I can see why.
And, side note, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. He's going to be Herman Munster in Mockingbird. It's 13,
Mockingbird Lane.
1313 Mockingbird Lane.
Yes, I can only imagine. I can't quite picture him as Herman Munster, so I have to go see this movie just to see how they do the makeup.
It's not a movie.
Ah.
It's a television series. It's going to be a television series. And they're not doing the exact full Frankenstein look to him.
Mm.
He just has a kind of an off look, but it's not the full Frankenstein.
Okay, he's not going to be the creature.
At least not the picture I've seen of it so far. He is going to have a different look to him, but not the full.
Yes, I understand. Also, this is not going to be quite a ha 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 comedy. It's a little more of a dark.
It's a dramatic series.
And yeah, it's very very different from what we saw in the 60s.
And what's his name? I'm blanking on this. He's going to be Grandpa.
Doing the Al Lewis part, yeah.
Yeah. Eddie. Oh, I'm blanking. This is terrible.
We'll come back to
this. Is it going to be a terrible edit for that?
You can look it up.
Yes, I can. Right.
Nevertheless, to back to all our actors here, where they all went after this movie. Some went on to grand and glorious careers. Some had a tragic end. One went kind of nowhere, or at least took a divergent tangent completely opposite of what you thought he was going to do. And
Eddie Izzard.
Hmm?
Eddie Izzard.
Okay.
Eddie Izzard's going to be Grandpa. Portia de Rossi is going to be Lily. Those are the ones I know. I don't really recognize some of the other names. Charity Wakefield is going to be Marilyn. Mason Cook is going to be Eddie. That's all I got right now.
Right. We'll have to see this one.
Apparently, though, Butch Patrick is listed in the credits.
Oh, great.
Which is awesome.
You can only imagine what
They don't give who he's playing, but he is listed in the credits.
I guess we'll just have to wait till the series comes out.
Yep.
And no doubt it will be terribly ironic or terribly bizarre.
Probably.
But going on to our actors, you know, where are they now sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of all of these, the most tragic, of course, is the early death of River Phoenix in 93 due to a drug overdose.
Yeah.
Which was terrible because he was just really starting to get into...
He's a good actor.
He was really starting to get into his major part of his career at this point.
He was a great actor.
Will Wheaton. This is a guy who had so much tremendous potential. Ended up on as one of the starring roles, reoccurring actor in Star Trek Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that series was sort of the almost end of his acting career due to some choices he decided to make and some unfortunate writing choices that the series writers did to him.
Yep.
He chronicled this all in a couple of books he wrote, which you can get. One is called Still a Geek, where he kind of goes into his decision of why he left the show and his subsequent mistakes he made in his acting career, which some were career fatalities.
Mm-hmm.
Makes fascinating reading if you want to find out what happened. Although he has seemed to have recovered quite a bit. He has been in some reoccurring TV stories, most notably Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
Where he plays himself.
Big Bang Theory, where he plays himself. Leverage, where he plays a hacker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, what a stretch.
Yeah. And The Guild. He's mm-hmm. he's
been many episodes of The Guild.
Yep.
And he was a big participant in Poker Stars.
Yes. Yes, he
so
was.
Apparently one of his favorite pastimes is professional poker playing.
One thing, Jerry O'Connell,
mm-hmm.
his character's name was Vern.
Vern, yes. We've been calling him Vince.
Vince, yeah.
Vern.
It's Vern.
Hey, Vern.
I was looking at something else and mm-hmm. noticed that.
I had been looking at it here, too, and I'd been calling him something else.
Kiefer Sutherland has gone on to a bazillion things.
Yes.
Most notably in recent history is Jack Bauer on the series 24.
Yes, and of course being John Malkovich.
Yeah, and Lost Boys and so many other things. It's not even worth it.
Corey Feldman and Jerry O'Connell went on to some really fantastic movies and TV series.
Mm-hmm.
This movie sort of launched their careers.
Well, yeah.
Or at least was a major boost at a very critical time in their lives.
Yeah, and oddly enough, Corey Feldman and Kiefer Sutherland worked together in Lost Boys just a couple mm-hmm. years after this. I'm sorry, a year after this.
So influential this movie has been, you know, for the actors has been tremendous.
Yes.
And at least in movie history, this is a very influential film. It carries a tremendous amount of critical, commercial, and audience success. I mean, it's very highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes, even mm-hmm. at this time. Commercially, it has been tremendous. It was made for something like $8 million and grossed $54 million, which not bad for a quote-unquote low-budget film that starred no major names.
Yeah, yeah. Directed by Rob Reiner.
And yeah, a Rob Reiner movie. If you like Rob Reiner, this is one of his better efforts.
Who, I have a personal connection to Rob Reiner as I parodied Rob Reiner in
yes.
This Is the Podcast.
Yes, yes you did if your you guys, best Rob Reiner imitation
if
ever.
If you guys haven't seen that, you need to go to YouTube and look up This Is the Podcast or go to podcast.com and look for the video. It is hilarious, embarrassing, and awesome all at once. And take special note to the cap that I'm wearing. It is a one-of-a-kind, unique...
And you know also something? You're a spitting image of Rob Reiner.
That was the point of getting that cap, was yep. to try and do his ball cap that he had throughout all of it. I was trying to do the ridiculous hand motions and everything. I had a lot of fun doing that. I really did have a lot of fun doing that.
You put a lot of study into This Is Spinal Tap.
I did. I watched a lot of Spinal Tap. Probably well before I knew I was going to do that. This is a good movie. It's a fun movie to watch. It is worth seeing. There is some nostalgia to it.
Oh yeah, and that's a lot of that.
And I don't have a problem with that. And it's for me. It's not even the nostalgia of being in the late 50s because
no,
I wasn't.
It's a nostalgia of the time and
of being that
age with your friends.
Yeah, and having that freedom and not having. I mean, they were all 12 years old, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be, they were all supposed to be 12 years old. Some of the actors were a little more than that, but. They were all supposed to be about that age because the next day, the mm-hmm. day after they got back, they started eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So that it was that time when you're feeling things out, you're testing things out, and you don't have to have mom and dad around all the time.
Well, in their case, none of their mom and dads were around except for Vern's. Most of them were pretty much had no parents to begin with. I mean, Gordy's parents were so distant from him because of his brother's death. Chris, we don't know where his parents are, except they're the considered the town finks. And Teddy, his father is either there or he's, as a junkyard dealer guy said, he's in the nut house.
Yeah.
So they're basically, you know, three out of the four are totally dysfunctional families.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, you know what, that's all I got.
Yeah. So if you got a rainy afternoon or you're just feeling like you want a movie that's a great little character study or coming-of-age film, you know, this is not a bad one to go to. And, of course, it has a very kick-ass soundtrack, too.
Yeah, it really does.
The soundtrack alone is...
It's got a lot of great music in it. Yeah. One thing I will note, I borrowed this movie from my library. So as such... I went online, and we've got a really cool online card catalog kind of deal. So I can go online, search for things. If I find something I want, I can ask, I can reserve it. If it's not available at my location, they'll pull it in from another. Well, they didn't have Stand By Me, the DVD, at our location. Actually, I take that back. They did, but somebody had it checked out. Mm. There was another one at another location that was on hold, but it would be returned in like the next day or so after I reserved it. Then I saw at another location, they had it on Blu-ray through our library system, and that was available. So I was, sure, I'll get the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray is the 25th anniversary edition Blu-ray, which came out last year, and it's a nice little package. They've got a really cool feature on it that allows you to play it. I can't remember the mode, but it's like some alternate mode that will flash something on the screen if it has pertinent information about the scene. So you can push a button and it'll give you information about the scene, the actors, what's going on behind the scenes.
Okay, so you like that. You have a nonlinear edit there.
Yeah, like a pop-up video kind of thing. So you can choose to engage that or not.
And follow the link through the DVD about what was going on at the time.
Yep. It's a nice little package. That if you get the chance to watch it on Blu-ray, it might be worth going through that. Honestly, I haven't gone through it yet, but I still have the Blu-ray for another week or two. I may just watch it with that just to see some of that behind the scenes.
The commentary
stuff.
That goes on, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it would be interesting to now look at what the actors were thinking, 25 years on.
Right.
About their performance and what was... And some of probably Rob Reiner's comments, too.
Yeah, he does tend to not hold back and let you know what he's thinking when was doing certain things. It's one of the kind of cool things about him.
Yes. A lot of, I think, directors nowadays have got, since they're doing the bonus material, have got, the in-house documentary crew running around at the times all this now. But
they do now. Yeah, they do now. But even going back and revisiting some of this stuff, because there are a number of interviews with him surrounding the stuff when they did anniversary things with Spinal Tap.
Mm-hmm.
They came back to him and the rest of the guys and interviewed them many, many times. On Spinal Tap, one of the funniest things is the full commentary track by Spinal Tap, where they're treating this as if it really was a documentary about them, and they're talking about how they were misrepresented in some of the places. They're like, oh, that guy's dead now. And they're like, no, that's the other guy. Oh, yeah, you're right. Next scene. Oh, that guy's dead now. No, I saw him last week. There's this running joke where all through the commentary, everybody's dead. And it's like, oh, no, yeah. Yeah, that guy really did die.
Yes, the years of performances late nights have taken their toll on
They rip on Rob Reiner's character. The scene early on where they're meeting with the record execs, they're ripping on the record execs. That's a fun one to watch, too. I think we're about wrapped up here.
Yep.
Don't forget, next week we are talking about...
Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears, the original. The original.
Very important. The original with Walter Matthau.
Yes.
Yes, and Tatum O'Neal.
And I do believe, is this a, I'm trying to remember now, the original, was it rated PG?
No, it was not. It was not. I think it was one of the, it had the infamous, the dubious distinction that it was not.
Yeah, well, it, see, I'm looking.
Nowadays, it would have been rated PG, but not for the time it was brought out.
Well, nowadays, no, it was actually rated PG.
Okay.
It was rated PG. Nowadays, it would be rated PG-13. There's no way this movie would have flew as PG. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance to watch this movie and you think, oh, it's a movie with kids and Walter Matthau in it, that's PG.
No, remember, this is a movie with kids and Walter Matthau. Take that as a warning.
Well, it was also a movie that came out pre-PG-13, where you could see PG movies with full frontal, you know, full breasts displayed, and that was fine. You could drop the F-bomb once, and that was okay. And your kids will learn many things if you let them watch this movie.
Yes, not always desirable, but many things nonetheless.
They will learn funny ways to
annoy you.
To annoy you by tossing racial slurs. 'Cause
yes, this is a very. This is unfortunately made in the era before political correctness.
That goddamn Tanner is the funniest thing in this movie. I kind of imagine that Adam was Tanner at some point. Anyway, we're going to call it a night. See you guys next time.
Thanks for coming.
See ya. Bye.